wanna say, I won't go back. If you wanna hit the road, then let's go then. Let's just go and see the world and just show them what it really means to live life golden. Yeah, we're golden, baby girl, we're golden. They're about to see us shine, cause we're golden. They can never break us down, cause we're golden. They're about to see us glow, cause we're golden.
So the point of the Fresh Kicks is that we are, for the next 6 weeks, going to be looking at things from the perspective, from the shoes of the people that encountered Jesus during his ministry. And this morning we are going to look at somebody that probably, maybe, most even churched people have not thought about a lot. We are going to talk about Pilate's wife. Pilate was the governor who oversaw one of the many trials that Jesus underwent before his crucifixion, and his wife actually has a part to play in the story. So this morning we're going to think about, when do we need to speak up? How do we need to speak up? And then how sometimes it might be better if we just remain quiet. When I taught sixth grade for my first career, I taught at a school in Claremont, North Carolina, and it was a school where a lot of the kids were on free and reduced lunch. And it was my first year teaching. I was green and perhaps lacked a little polishing as an educator. And I grew up with a father who had 23 years of military experience. So I grew up around colorful language. And so I perhaps adopted some of my father's colorful language. It's something I'm trying to give up for Lent, and it's not going well. But it's my vice. And so when I taught sixth grade, there was this young man, and his name was Duran. And he was just probably one of the sweetest young men you'd ever want to know. And he came to sixth grade, and he didn't have all the resources that everybody else had. And he goes on to tell this story actually at the end of the year. So he gave me permission to tell his story and use his name. When he came into sixth grade, he could read on a second grade level. No exaggeration. He really had struggled. And so one of our goals was to get him to sixth grade reading level before he went off. Back then, sixth grade was still a part of elementary school, before he went off to middle school. And so I decided that I wanted to do this thing called Student of the Week. And it's not, you know, like where the classmates vote and it's the star student. We wanted to affirm students and build their self-esteem. So what we would do is we would put the kids' names in a hat, and just like we did with the shoes on Friday, we'd draw a kid's name out. And then every student in the classroom had the responsibility of saying one kind thing to that student. And we called it an affirmation circle, and every Friday we would do a different student. And so it was probably the second month of school, and we got ready to draw, and Duran was chosen. His face lit up. He was so happy that he was chosen to be the student of the week. And so we got ready to do the affirmation circle, and this one young man spoke up before we could get started, and he goes, "What if you don't know anything nice about them at all?" And you could just see Duran's face fall. One of the things that I'm passionate about is not putting other people down, and so it infuriated me just a little. Duran had started school with not a notebook to his name. He didn't have new clothes like the other kids. He didn't have a new backpack. Actually, Duran is the motivator to start the back-to-school bash, because we believe every kid should be able to start school on equal footing. And so when this young man said that, "What if you don't know anything nice about them at all?" Duran's face fell, and my heart hurt, and my mouth went into action. And so I said the young boy's name, and I said, "How dare you be such a smart ass lick," to Duran. And then they're sixth graders. They're like, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I did not just use almost profanity, but in their minds, it was profanity in front of my sixth grade classroom. It'll be the shortest first year of teaching and teaching career in the history of mankind. So as soon as school was over, I marched myself to my principal's office. I said, "Mr. Watson, I need to talk to you and tell you what I've done. I have called a student a smart'un." And I didn't say, he's like, "Andrea." And then he just started to laugh. And he's like, "You know what? We all make mistakes. Did you apologize to him?" I said, "Yes, profusely." And he said, "Okay." I'm like, "Well, do I call his mom and say, 'Hey, I just wanted to let you know I called your kid a smart'un today'?" And he said, "No, I think let's just let it be. And let's see if she calls you. Let's see if she speaks up and says something to you." I said, "Okay." So you know what? The weekend came and went and no phone call from his mom. And I felt like, wow, okay, I have skirted this one and I'm so glad. And then about 6 months later on a Friday, my phone rang and it was this young man's mom. And she's like, "How dare you?" And I'm like, "What?" And she's like, "I don't know if what I was told today is true or not. I just can't believe that you would do this." And I'm like, "What?" I mean, I'm trying to think of what I did, like, you know, that day, that week. And she's like, "I was told today that you called my son a smart'un." And I'm like, "Well, yes, I did. 6 months ago, but not today, but I'm still very sorry." And she's like, "Well, I wonder what made him speak up now." And I said, "I don't know." Well, what made him speak up is he had failed one of the tests that he had gotten that week, and he was angry with me, like it's my fault he failed the test. And so he chose to tell his mom that night. Her question was a good one. What made him choose to speak up then? That's what I want us to think about this morning, actually, in each of our own lives. We face situations all the time that, you know, cause us to think about things in different ways, things that make us question how we feel about things or maybe make us defensive about how we feel about issues and social justice issues and the way that people are treated in our world and the ways that things are happening. And what makes us decide when we choose to speak up and when we don't? That's actually what happened with Pilate's wife. Now, historically, it would not have been popular or well received for a woman of a high political official to speak up, especially if it is contrary to what her husband, the governor, was doing. But that's exactly what Pilate's wife did. She chose, despite it being unpopular, to speak up. And listen to what she said. Jesus was placed before the governor. This is from the Gospel of Matthew chapter 27. And the governor questioned him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus said, "Well, if you say so." But when the accusations rained down hot and heavy from the high priest and religious leaders, Jesus said nothing. He didn't defend himself. He didn't try to, you know, give them all the points that he was innocent. He said nothing. Pilate asked him, "Do you hear the long list of accusations? Aren't you going to say anything?" Jesus kept silent. And not a word came out of his mouth, and the governor was really impressed. It was an old custom during the feast for the governor to pardon a single prisoner, and that prisoner would be named by the crowd. At the time, they had a couple of prisoners, and one was infamous. He was an insurgent. His name was Jesus Barabbas, and he also was in prison. So Pilate asked the crowd, "Which prisoner do you want me to pardon, Jesus Barabbas or Jesus the so-called Christ?" Now Pilate knew that it was through sheer spite. I mean, the people were just so mad at Jesus. So that's why they were calling for him to be crucified. He was breaking all their norms and their rules and pushing their boundaries. So Pilate knew that it was spiteful that they had turned Jesus over to him. So basically what this is saying is Pilate knew that what he was doing was not really right. Pilate knew that there was an innocent man getting ready to face losing his life. While court was still in session, Pilate's wife sent him a message. Don't get mixed up in judging this noble man. I've been through a long and troubled night because of a dream about him. Before I read the rest of the passage, I want us to think about that for just a second in our own lives. No doubt we've all had some sleepless nights or some pit feelings in our stomach when we have been in a situation or we know that there is a situation that is going on and we are facing this decision about whether we speak up or we remain silent. I want us to think, why do we not speak up actually? I mean, Pilate's wife, like, she risked things. She decided that she wanted to speak up because she had had this troubled night. She didn't sleep. She'd had an awful dream. And she knew that what was happening out there with Jesus was wrong. And so she spoke up. Why don't we? Because we all have missed opportunities where we have chosen not to speak up in defense of what is right or defense of other people. Why do we not speak up? Is it because we're afraid of being unpopular? You know, I mean, that's the thing, like in elementary school and middle school and high school. And, you know, I'd love to say that, you know, once we hit like adulthood, you know, we overcome that desire to be popular. And we start claiming our inner voice and our courage. But that just isn't the case. That isn't how it always works. We still have that desire to be liked. And so sometimes we just won't speak up and speak out for that which is right because we fear the repercussions to ourselves. So that's why this is about perspectives. What if we put ourself in the perspective, in the shoes of the other person? What if that starts guiding our decisions about when we need to speak up and when we need to speak out? Maybe it's time that we get over our fear of not being popular. Another reason that we don't speak up sometimes is we are afraid we're going to be wrong. So what criteria do we use then about knowing when we should speak up and when we shouldn't? Because you know what? We're all human and we're going to make mistakes. But what if we start thinking, okay, if I speak up right now, then I'm acting out of love. Or I'm acting out of grace. Or I'm acting out of kindness for the other person or for the situation that is at hand. If we will start using that as our guardrails and that as our boundaries for when we need to speak up, then good things can happen. And change can be made. One of the other reasons I feel like we don't speak up is that we're just not paying attention. So many times we become so self-absorbed in our own world and in our own stuff, we don't notice what is going on around us. And so we neglect to use our voice and use our authority and take our responsibility to make a difference. Now, there are also times that we speak up and perhaps we shouldn't. There was a gentleman, he was one of my supervisors when West started about 10 years ago, and he was over congregational development. And I'd been in a meeting with a bunch of people that were starting new churches, and we were doing things a little differently from the beginning. And so it wasn't always very popular. And I just decided, okay, I can either be quiet or I can speak up. And that's probably about 10 years ago when I learned that sometimes it's just better to say what needs to be said. I learned that perhaps I don't always do it in the right way and with grace. And so Steve James came up to me after a meeting. He said, you know what, Andrea, you just have no filter. I'm like, I don't know what that means. I don't think it's a compliment. I realized that it was like one of those backhanded compliments, like it's okay that you say what you say, but maybe you need to like make it a little more fluffy. I gave him an air conditioner filter for Christmas that year, and in hindsight, in retrospect, wrote on it all the phrases that I knew I shouldn't have used in that clergy meeting. There are times that we speak up and we shouldn't. There are times that we use our words and they're not for good. And that's what happened with Pilate. So I want you to hear the rest of the story. After Pilate's wife sent the message to him, meanwhile, the high priest and religious leaders, they'd talked the crowd into asking for the pardon of Barabbas and the execution of Jesus. And the governor asked, "Which of these two do you want me to pardon?" And the crowd screamed out to him, "Barabbas." And then Pilate said, "Well, what do you want me to do with Jesus, the so-called Christ?" And they all shouted, "Nail him to a cross." Pilate did object. He's like, "For what? What crime did he commit?" The crowd didn't answer that question. They couldn't answer that question. They just cried out louder, "Nail him to the cross." So listen to what Pilate does. When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere and that a riot was imminent, he took a basin of water, he washed his hands in full sight of the crowd, saying, "I'm washing my hands of responsibility. I'm washing my hands for responsibility of this man's death. From now on, it's in your hands. You are the judge and the jury." So years ago, when Pilate was in front of the people, he's like, "Okay, this one is not on me. You're responsible for his death." Now, Pilate could have chosen to use his voice in a lot of different ways that day. He tried a little, right? Like, I mean, we want to give him some credit. He did speak up a little, but he just didn't have that courage that it took to help Jesus escape that physical death. Now, I want to push us this morning to think about things in our context and our culture. We're probably not going to, you know, leave church today and go find some kind of public trial where people are facing a crucifixion. That's not going to happen. But there are people in our world and our society that die a little bit every day because of the oppression that they face, the ridicule that they face, the prejudice that they face, the discrimination that they face. Everybody faces a little death at the hands of other people. And we are called as people of love. Whether you believe in Jesus and the whole resurrection thing and the virgin birth, I don't care. We are called to love people just as humanity. So as a people of love, we are called to use our voices and speak out. And we don't need to wait till we're at the end of this earthly existence to learn that lesson. We need to claim our voices, whether we're in elementary school or middle school and we see somebody getting picked on and we know that we can stand up to our friends and say, "Hey, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't be saying negative things, or maybe we should include them in our circle." Or whether we see people facing opposition and prejudice because of lifestyles and choices that they make that's in their best interest. We are called to be like Pilate's wife, not like Pilate. We're called to learn to look and see when we need to use our voices to speak out, and truthfully, when we need to learn to be silent and act as a people of grace. In just a few minutes, we're going to show a video for you to spend some time of reflection on how you can speak up. What situations you're facing in your life that maybe you are called to use your voice for the good of others. And then where are some times and places like me, perhaps we need to be a little more quiet. But I want to end today with something that probably you're going to hear more about between now and May. I was in a clergy meeting a few weeks ago, and at the end, one of the clergy people said, you know, I need to just ask your advice on something. She said, you know, the whole general conference thing that's going to happen in May about whether the United Methodist Church is going to split or not over the issue of will we ordain gay clergy and will we allow our clergy to do same-sex weddings? And she said, my church is in a difficult and precarious place, and I don't know what to do. She explained that a few weeks ago, a young man, a young teenager in their worshiping community had explained to his parents that he was gay. And his mom was really struggling with his decision, so she took to social media and started sharing her family's stuff on Facebook. Of course, the church members were all friends with one another on social media, and so the pastor's phone that evening started, you know, exploding. Now, brief aside, a few months ago when the New York Times article hit about the proposed divide in the United Methodist Church, my phone exploded that afternoon. But my phone exploded in a much different way than this pastor's. Everybody, she said literally everybody that started texting her said, I want to know when you're going to ask this young man to leave the church. And she's like, I'm not. And so then there was a called staff parish meeting, and they called her in and said, you know, you're our leader, you're our religious leader, and it's time for you to speak up. She said in that moment, she didn't know what to do. And I can see that, I can feel that. If your whole committee, the one that hires you or recommends you to be hired and kept or not, is telling you that you're wrong. She said, I haven't slept because I feel like we are hurting this young man and we are showing him how the church really isn't the church. So when I tell you that we face decisions in our lives where we cause death to other people and death to their souls, I mean it. I'm not just being figurative and fluffy. It's true. When we make decisions to discriminate and to use our bias and our prejudice to hurt other people, we are no better than Pilate, who stood up and washed his hands and said, I have no responsibility. The really powerful thing in that meeting is that every pastor in that circle told her that she needed to speak up and she needed to tell the church that they needed to be a place of grace and a place of peace. So, for the next few minutes, I want you to decide where in your life there is a situation that you can claim your voice for the good of someone else. Where can you reach down deep and find some courage to confront a situation? That's part of what Lent is. We dig deep and we see what we need to do differently. And then are there places and times in our lives that perhaps we speak up harshly and we need to look at doing that differently too? A friend of mine was asked by one of his friends, so what's going to happen with your church in May when all that stuff happens at General Conference? And my friend said, well, I anticipate that West will grow, actually, because we're very clear on who we are and we believe that there's no distinction or discrimination. We believe that all people are amazing And all people are people of God, and all people are love. So over the next couple of months, you might have an opportunity to say something. I hope you'll claim it. Let us pray. Gracious God, we do offer ourselves to you, and we ask that you reveal to us where it is that you would have us in our lives. Use our voice to make a difference for other people. Whatever the situation is, God, where others are being discriminated against or made to feel left out or lesser than, God, use us. May we be a people of love, and like Pilate's wife, challenge the status quo and challenge injustice that we see around us. We offer ourselves to you in Christ's holy name. So a friend of mine gave up something that I consider pretty impossible for Lent. And then when he messes up and does it again, he's like, Lent starts right now. And I joked with him, I'm like, you're going to be saying that on Easter. You're going to say like, Lent starts right now. And it might, okay? So it's not too late to start Lent. Give up something that gets in the way of you experiencing God's love and take on something that'll make a difference in the community, and let's give some kids new pairs of tennis shoes. Go in peace. Amen.